It's episode 126 of the Hodgepodge Podcast. I'm your host, Doug.
And I'm Dirty A. As the name suggests, we're going to talk about a hodgepodge of topics from movies, music, TV, and other pop culture events.
And on this episode, we'll be discussing the films Office Christmas Party, Nocturnal Animals, and La La Land. You can reach us at thehodgepodgepodcast at gmail.com or over on our website, thehodgepodgepodcast.com, or look us up on iTunes and YouTube and subscribe, or head over to Facebook, search for the Hodgepodge Podcast, and like our page. And once again, the Westworld episode is delayed.
Yeah.
We're having trouble getting our schedules coordinated, so Westworld will be... Hopefully we'll have that episode done before the end of the year, because I'm figuring our next episode will probably be Rogue One.
Yeah.
Probably.
Better be.
Yeah, we saw some movies this past week, and Dirty A saw one that I'm going to see tomorrow night. Very much looking forward to it, Manchester by the Sea. He says I need to bring
Oh, that's why you didn't take the screeners.
Which ones?
The collateral beauty screeners.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I've already got my ticket. I bought my ticket already after you told me that your screening sold out.
That was the weirdest thing. It was a freaking... late afternoon show. I thought I'd be like one of three people in there, and the whole damn thing sold out except the front two rows, which, you know, that's kind of overflow anyway.
Yeah. But it's really good, you said, right?
Yeah. It's heartbreaking.
I can't wait to see it. It's heartbreaking. I can't wait to see it. We were just talking before we started recording about, because last episode we talked about a bunch of trailers that came out, and one trailer. Did you watch the trailer yet for Planet of the Apes?
No, I didn't.
The trailer for War of the Planet of the Apes came out, and it looks really freaking good.
I mean, so the last two have been good, so yeah, no reason for this one to be different.
Woody Harrelson plays the villain. He's a colonel. And
who's direct? Is it?
It's the same guy who directed the second one.
The Dawn?
Yeah. Okay. Good. And yeah, because that one's the best one of the two so far. So I'm really looking forward to that. That comes out in July. You know what? I think it comes out the week after Spider-Man. And then the new Spider-Man trailer came out.
Yeah, that's the big news, I guess.
Yeah, that's the big news.
I'm sure you saw it because if you logged in Facebook, it was everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. It's good. I mean, I liked it. Zendaya is completely unrecognizable. She's in like one very quick scene in the trailer. It's mainly about it mainly focuses on Tom Holland as Peter Parker and Spider-Man. It also looks like he can't keep his freaking mask on, and he's got Tobey Maguire.
Everyone knows who he is.
He's got the Tobey Maguire problem. And
the trailer mostly focuses on like high school him,
right? In high school, and also Tony Stark. Tony Stark is in this trailer, and you see a little bit of Michael Keaton.
Yeah, clearly his mentor. He's, you know,
right. Yeah,
takes him under his wings and tutelage.
Yeah, I'm hoping that's going to work out okay.
I think it's fine.
My only issue is that the last shot is of Iron Man and Spider-Man going through the city together, right. And I'm just like, please let that be like the last scene, like. You know, the 80s movie, dun, 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 and like that's like the last scene in the cuts to credits. Like, I don't want it to be like, you know, I gotta go fight the Vulture and the Shocker, I'm gonna need Iron Man's help. It's like, now it's not a Spider-Man movie anymore.
I don't think it'll be at the end, but I don't think he's going to like constantly be showing up in it.
I hope not.
But it's probably not like, it's probably not the end scene, because that would mirror too closely Civil War.
Maybe.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of how that ended. Yeah. So, it's probably not going to be just like that.
It's like I told you and Matt, you know, I just, part of the appeal of Spider-Man is that he is, like, this everyman character who solves all these problems on his own.
Yeah, he comes to terms with his abilities by himself, and that's right. part of the
his
fun
appeal.
Of Spider-Man,
yeah.
Is that watching him fail...
Right.
And have to figure it out.
And like, and they did have, you know, as Matt pointed out, because we have a little group chat we've got, Matt pointed out, you know, yeah, Tony Stark shows up in the comic books and, you know, mentors him later in his career. But at that point, he's more like a life coach. Like, you're a really smart guy, get your shit together. You know, kind of like that.
It'll be an interesting dynamic as to how they work it in. But, you know, that's just a problem in general when you've already introduced all the Avengers, because if you have these villains, super villains,
right,
Yeah, why aren't any number of the Avengers already on that case as opposed to some high school Spider-Man?
Yeah, like, and the other problem is, though, is that Spider-Man is, while he is definitely Marvel's most popular character, he's more on the level with, like, Batman and Daredevil, in that he's more like a street-level character. Right. So I'm also hoping that his... I'm hoping that the Vultures, because that's who Michael Keaton's playing, and the costume looks pretty cool. I thought it looked pretty neat from the glimpses you get of it. But I'm hoping that the Vultures' plan is not, like, city-threatening, like the Lizard, because that's part of the problem.
That would be what would take away from... why aren't the rest of the Avengers
in? Exactly.
It needs to be smaller in scope.
Right.
For it not to fully be on the radar of.
Because.
Like maybe some bank heist or, you know, stealing something.
Right. Well, in the trailer, they have him. He shoots, like, a beam and, like, cuts, like, this cruise ship in half. I was like, if that's it, and he's got to save, like, 1,000 people, that's okay. That's Spider-Man's gig. You know, that's similar to The Dark Knight, where the Joker was going to blow up those two boats.
I agree. You don't always have to up the ante with every fucking
right
movie.
And then that was the problem with The Dark Knight Rises, where, you know, Nolan said, no, now he's going to save the whole city from a nuclear bomb. It's like, no, that's a Superman problem, not a Batman problem. Right. So I hope they keep it kind of tamped down with what Spider-Man deals with. The, you know, I'm hoping, because, like, all the Spider-Man movies have disappointed me on one level or another.
The tone feels right.
The tone does feel right. It really does. But the thing for me is, like, you know, if you're trying to do a real, if you're just trying to do a perfect Spider-Man movie, you just take the first couple runs of Brian Michael Bendis' Ultimate Spider-Man, you take them, step one, take them, and then step two, put them on the screen, and then there you go, you got your
movies.
And
you give him, like, a shotgun.
Yes.
Like the Mexican Spider-Man.
Right, yes, yes.
You gotta have that.
But, like, yeah, like, in the first, when they did the first run of that, the first story where the Green Goblin shows up in Ultimate Spider-Man, and for those who don't know, we've talked about it before, but Ultimate Spider-Man was, like, a reboot in, like, a different universe to kind of draw new readers to Spider-Man, X-Men, and the, you know, the key Marvel characters. And, you know, the thing that Spider-Man saves from the Green Goblin is the school. You know, it wasn't like Amazing Spider-Man 1 where the Lizard comes to the school and then it's like, now I'm going to go blow up the city. Right. It's like, no. The school's fine. Saving all the kids is fine. That's Spider-Man's bad.
I feel like the studios, the execs... For some reason, they have a hard-on for world-saving type of things. Like, people won't go see it.
Well, yeah, because...
If it's at a smaller scale, but, you know,
right.
It's the same idea. People are going to like the movie if it's a good story.
Right. Yeah, because they definitely do that because they're like, it has to be big because it's a movie, which is kind of what we talked about before with the comic book movies, is that these should all be TV series.
But yeah,
anyway.
I'm worried about the angle of making Spider-Man a little too grandiose at the get-go, too. Even with, you know, it's like going back earlier what we were talking about. It's nice that Spider-Man is kind of, in the comics, at least at first, when you give him an origin story in a bubble, in that he creates his own tech.
Right.
And he you see that he's a super genius kid, right? Whereas now, all of a sudden, Tony Stark's creating his suit.
Yeah.
You know, and that takes a little allure away from Peter Parker.
Right.
Right? How smart is he really?
Right.
Tony Stark could create a fucking suit for anybody and make him a superhero. So.
Right.
We'll see.
Yeah. I'm hoping it's going to be good, though. It looks so far so good. Looks good. So those are, like, two big trailers that are out now. We were also just talking before we started recording. There's a new series that kind of came out of nowhere on Netflix called The Oa with Britt Marling, who was in... what was that movie she was in? The one with the eco-terrorists. I forget the name of it off the top of my head. Hang on, let me look it up real quick.
Monsters?
No. It was, they were like the rich kids and, let me see, I'll find it in a second. The East.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's her and then the guy who directed it. It's them working together on this TV show.
Okay. Yeah, that was a good movie.
And the TV show is called The Oa, and basically Britt Marling plays this this woman who disappeared 7 years ago, and when she was like a little girl, and when she vanished, she was blind. And then now she comes back and she's she can see. And it's kind of got a little bit of a Stranger Things vibe, Stranger maybe.
X-Files-ish.
Yeah. So
you don't know if she, you know, it'll probably twirl. I can't decide if they're going like supernatural, like she was in another dimension,
or is it
aliens?
It's like
government
or aliens. The poster seems to show like the stars and stuff like that. That's extensive, so I'm thinking it might be aliens.
It might be aliens. Yeah.
But we'll see.
She
looks,
has some cryptic,
yeah, tattoos or something like that on her back.
Or burns or something.
Or
yeah. So, but no, it looks good, and I'll be binging that on Friday if I don't work.
I kind of does start Friday, doesn't
yeah.
it? Kind of hate you.
Yeah.
Right. And we're seeing Rogue One on Thursday night.
Yeah, we are.
Good word of mouth coming out of the premiere screening that happened, I guess, in L.A. So all the people who have seen it say it's good. And of course, you know, the typical mantra is, it's the best one since Empire.
That's the thing. That's why I can't go.
But
why I can't listen to it. It's good.
But when
they're always going to say it's good.
But when you think about it, it's like, it's the best one since Empire. You think about it, you're like, that's not that hard.
That's true. Jedi is far inferior. And then the prequels don't count at all in terms of being
Force Awakens.
Wonderful.
Force Awakens was good, but,
yeah.
you know.
Yeah. So, you're right.
It's not that hard.
I mean, that'd be great, but
yeah.
it's not necessarily saying right. all that much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so let's get started on the reviews. We saw three movies, and the first one we're going to talk about is one, I guess this one, because I guess La La Land is in limited release, technically.
That's right.
So this one came out wide release this past weekend, along with the other one we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about Office Christmas Party first. This is a raunchy comedy from directors Josh Gordon and Will Speck. And the screenplay was written by a whole host of people. And it's not a great movie.
Yeah. It's not classically good.
Right. It's not. It's pretty stupid. But man, I laughed a whole lot.
Yeah,
this
it's filled
movie.
With a lot of. It's filled with a lot of laughs. I mean, it is the dumb comedy you're likely expecting it to be going into it. I mean, if
yeah.
you're looking for anything other than that,
yeah.
I don't know why you're going to see it in the first place.
Yeah, yeah. We saw one really really bad review. We won't mention where it came from, Collider, but. When I read that, I was like, what were you expecting when you walked into this movie?
It's like he's reviewing Gone with the Wind, going to see Office Christmas Party.
Yeah.
You need to
dial it back.
Switch your expectations.
Right. It's got a great cast. The cast is fantastic. It's got Jason Bateman is basically the main character. It's got TJ Miller, who is the co-lead. And Jennifer Aniston's in this. Olivia Munn. Kate McKinnon, Courtney B. Vance,
who's funnier than she was in
Ghostbusters. And I said that in the movie when she was dancing. I'm like, why couldn't she be doing that in Ghostbusters?
I thought she was funnier than this than she was in Ghostbusters.
Gillian Bell shows up. Rob Corddry, Vanessa Bayer, Randall Park. It's just a
bunch of funny people.
Great cast.
But Jason Bateman essentially plays the straight man to TJ Miller's.
Yeah, TJ Miller's crazy
comedy.
Yeah,
craziness.
Right.
Yeah.
And basically what happens is that all these guys work at a tech company, and they...
like a smaller tech company.
I guess,
a
yeah.
medium
like,
size.
They do.
Not the size of a Google or...
No. But they do, like, servers and stuff like that. So, like, Dell and, you know, IBM and all those guys, they do like, servers and stuff like that. And Jason Bateman plays, like, the chief technical officer. TJ Miller... He's a branch manager, but it's because his dad owned the company. His dad was the head of the company, or at least he ran the branch or whatever.
He was the head of the company,
right.
And this was like the head,
the home branch, the home branch
that he led as well. Yeah,
and Jennifer Aniston plays TJ Miller's older sister, who is in the running, I guess, to be CEO. Because at first they said she was a CEO.
She's interim CEO.
Right. That's what it was.
Yeah.
That's right.
She's interim CEO because the dad just passed recently.
Right.
And she is the CEO until they can
elect the board can vote on a new CEO.
And so she's been going around the country and closing down shops. And so she comes to Chicago, which is where the movie is set. And she tells T.J. Miller that she's going to close their branch unless they can, you know, get up to snuff. And snuff is, like, very, very high. It's like, it's like,
I mean, she's already closing branches. It's, right. She's doing that. She's trying to, basically, she's trying to, in a very short amount of time, show significant profits so she'll become the CEO.
Right. So, what happens is that they, the Jason Bateman and TJ Miller and Olivia Munn make a deal with her, and they say, hey, if we land Courtney B. Vance, if we land his business, can you keep us open and everybody gets their bonuses?
It's a huge contract that's up.
Right.
That's up
it's like $14 million, yeah. Something like that. And she goes, yeah, fine, no problem. So they go to a meeting with Courtney B. Vance and it tanks, and then they say, hey, do you party? And he goes, I used to. And then, so their plan is to throw this giant, freaking party that's a blowout, this huge blowout where they're going to get this guy, you know, not, their plan isn't to get him loaded, but it's just to show him such a good time that he wants to go with their company.
I mean, honestly, we're spending way too much time on the plot.
Yes, we are.
Because the plot of this movie doesn't matter at all. It's irrelevant.
Right. So then they throw their party and hijinks ensue. And everybody has their little thing going on, and it all kind of comes together fairly well. The movie kind of takes a left turn in the middle because, like, they're having this party
with
and everything.
The hookers?
That's kind of where it goes off the rails. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And that's where I was like, this isn't working for me as much. So, but it's freaking hilarious. It's dumb as hell. It's so stupid. But with this cast, you really can't go wrong. If you don't like raunchy comedy, you're going to hate it. There is a dick pic, and the character work is superficial at best.
I mean, it's all about the gags and the one liner jokes here. I mean, that's what the movie's made for, and that's what it succeeds at. But it's not a great movie. I'm not even sure. Off the top of my head, I'm not even sure it's the funniest movie of the year, but it's a funny movie.
Right.
You'll laugh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good time. It's a good time in the theater. And again, you know, this cast is just, it's freaking hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a lot to talk about here because
there really isn't.
It's just about the jokes within the movie.
Yeah.
That occur, and the plot is nothing more than filler before the next gag.
Right. So. Yeah. Right. Is that Dad? No, it's just some other guy's ashes I have in the office. So
what was really dumb was the gag reel they put at the end.
Yeah,
that was the dumbest part because that wasn't even funny. Like, the movie was funnier than the gag reel. Like, why put in a gag reel in a movie that's completely full of gags?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yeah, it's worth seeing. What's next?
Let's go to a movie that you probably felt was not worth seeing. And that is writer-director Tom Ford's latest film, Animals. Nocturnal Animals. Can you at least let me get the title first? Nocturnal Animals. Tom Ford is... what did he do before? He's like a fashion guy, right?
Yes.
He's a fashion guy. And his original... his first movie he did was... A single man. Because we had this debate.
Like,
we didn't
a
know.
Simple man.
There's a simple man, the serious man, and a single man.
Colin Firth was in that one.
Colin Firth and Julianne Moore. And basically, Colin Firth. I never saw it. I just know the plot.
Well, sadly, we're not reviewing that movie.
Right. Yeah. But he was like his lover had died, and then he was going to kill himself the next day. So it was his last day on Earth or whatever. Nocturnal Animals is actually based on a novel called Tony and Susan. And it's a weird one. should we ruin the opening scene for our listeners?
Oh, sure. When we say opening scene, we're talking like no title credit, no nothing. Right. Just boom.
I have to be honest. When the music came on and then what was happening, I was fully expecting Tom Ford's like initials to show up at the bottom, like
right.
like Revan's in Neon Demon. But basically, the first shot is of very, very, very large mammaries.
Yeah. and a very overly obese woman stripping.
Well, she's already naked. She's dancing. Yeah, she's dancing and stuff like that. And then they cut to another woman like that dancing and another woman like that. And it's...
It's literally 3 to 4 minutes at the opening of
yeah, it's
overly obese naked dancers. But I mean, I don't even know what to say. I mean, it's not that I can't stomach that by any means.
Right.
But
it was just odd.
It was odd.
It was purely in there for shock value. And the reason why they did it is because when they cut to like the next scene, basically, which is in that scene,
well, it's almost like it expands.
It expands out. You find out that is what you've been watching are video screens in this art gallery. And the film stars Amy Adams as an overly obese woman who likes to strip. No, I'm kidding. She's Amy Adams is plays Susan, and she is the art gallery owner. And what is?
Yeah, I guess she's the owner. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, she's the owner. She's not the artist.
But she was also. Oh, I thought she was also the one who did that.
I thought she was just the owner. I think she's both.
Because she, there are scenes in there where she talked about. It personally, so I think she was both. She's both the owner and the artist,
right? So, and then she had the women in the videos were lying on these like daises, and then like, but they're just like lying there, and they didn't look like they were breathing. I'm like, are they dead? I'm like, did she kill them for her art?
Right, like, is this going to be like some underground crazy art club?
She is married to Armie Hammer. Who is like this successful businessman who's kind of hitting the skids. He's got to make some deal happen in New York or something like that.
It's very reference of them going bankrupt.
And what happens is that she receives a package from, I guess it was that night, the night of the opening, and then the next morning she gets a package. And it's a manuscript from her ex-husband, who's played by Jake Gyllenhaal.
Who she hasn't seen in 19 years.
Yeah, she hasn't seen him in 19 years. He dedicates the book to her, and he basically leaves a note and says, oh, I'd love for you to read it, blah, 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 blah.
He's like, I'm going to be in town sometime.
Yeah. And so the rest of this movie is just her reading this book, and it's
with shortcuts back into her reality.
Into her reality, into her past.
Yeah.
And, you know, into her past and also her present, you know, because, like, Armie Hammer, you find out that he's cheating on her and stuff like that. So,
but the majority of it is, it's intermingled between what she's reading, the story, the fictitious story that she's reading within the movie.
Right.
And then the telling of how her and Jake Gyllenhaal met and what happened.
And they the majority of the movie is this story within a story. And
I know that shouldn't matter to me because every movie is just a story.
Right.
It's a fictitious story anyway. But for whatever reason, because of the way it's told, I just didn't care about the story within the story. I wasn't in suspense or wondering what happened because I knew it was just a book being read by the character on the screen.
Right. And the other thing is, too, is that it's too bad because the story in the book is actually compelling.
If you had just made that the movie...
And then you find out at the end that she's reading the book.
Better
or
movie.
Yeah.
Or just, no, just cut that out altogether and just make a movie around the actual story. To me, that's better, but whatever. I mean, the acting was good here.
Yeah.
Especially Michael Shannon, who was fucking awesome.
Yeah. Basically, the story within the story is about a guy who's also played by Jake Gyllenhaal. And he is driving with his wife and daughter. His wife is played by Isla Fisher. The daughter, I don't know. And offhand, I don't know. And They're driving.
It's soon not to matter.
What?
It's soon not to matter.
They're driving through Texas, I guess, right? I guess they're in Texas or something like that. They're on this dark highway, and these guys, these good old boys, are in this car, and they're blocking them, and they run them off the road, basically. And the leader of the guys is played by Aaron Taylor Johnson, kick-ass to you. And
fuck!
Yeah, that's
where I knew him from.
Yeah, and Quicksilver from Avengers.
Yeah.
Basically, what happens is they kidnap the daughter and the wife, and then Jake Gyllenhaal is contacted by, after he gets out of his own predicament, he is contacted by Michael Shannon, who plays this unorthodox detective, we'll say. And
also kind of like a good old Texas boy, but he's on the right side of the law kind of thing. I mean, he's...
Is he?
Yes.
I mean, he's all about justice at any cost. And basically,
yeah, it's like every fucking thing he does, you just look and you go, well, that's not going to hold up in court,
right?
Like, none of this will ever work.
And the story basically becomes like a metaphor or allegory.
It's an allegory for
how their relationship fell apart, and
or how I don't remember the character's name. How Jake Gyllenhaal's character, his real character, not the
right.
His real character sees his life with them,
right?
And how she basically, I guess I couldn't tell. In the story, it didn't seem that he necessarily blamed... It didn't place blame in his story that he wrote. Clearly, he blamed her for... Were they married?
They were married. They got married. Because she came from a very rich family, and he was not... he was not rich.
He was literally just a poor writer who was just trying to struggle, make it on his own.
Yeah, she was friends with his brother. He was friends with her brother
in high school.
In high school,
and then they kind of met on the streets and reconnected.
Right.
Up in New York, and
right.
and got married. Her mom tried to convince her not to do it.
Laura Linney plays her mom.
Laura Linney, and eventually, as Laura Linney predicts, she does basically become her mother.
Right, and she
leaves him. For Armie Hammer in the story. I mean, it doesn't go into detail, but...
Right.
And she aborts their child.
Yes.
To which he finds out.
Right.
And that didn't sit very well, I guess.
No.
And I thought that was... It come from the trailers, I thought that was going to go somewhere darker in the story, but it doesn't.
And I thought somehow... I mean, I didn't know, obviously, from the trailers, you don't know it's a story within a story, but... Right. I thought somehow that was going to tie in somehow. Like I thought, like, obviously the people in the story weren't going to tie into her real life.
Right. It wasn't going to be some direct connection.
But I thought that maybe he would show up or something like that and be like, you know, crazy stalker.
That's what
guy
I thought. Right.
Yeah.
He was going to show up and take her hostage or something.
Right. Right.
Or just in the end, she gets killed or something.
Or hell,
like
even a guy that looks like Aaron Taylor Johnson shows up or something like that. You know, I thought it was going to be something like that. And there's no payoff.
Or anything. Maybe you find out he wrote the fucking book from a mental institution or something like that.
Yeah,
Anything to pay it off. But
there's no payoff at
all.
The
payoff at the end is literally her sitting in a restaurant waiting to meet him, and it looks like he's not going to show up because she's gone through a few drinks.
Right.
And then it fades to black. That's it.
And then you're like, wait, what?
and halfway through the movie, I knew it was fucking going to do that. Mm-hmm. I knew it was going to be the movie that did that. And there are movies that can do that with a big payoff.
Right.
Like, what's a, no, like No Country for Old Men.
Right.
Huge payoff, and that's how it cuts to black.
Right.
And in the middle of, almost in the middle of a scene.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a good payoff. This just, it didn't work for me. I don't know. I mean, I know it's real artsy, I guess.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not saying I'm not highbrow enough.
Right.
I enjoy movies that are avant-garde.
Right.
This wasn't one of them.
I think I enjoyed it a little bit more than you, but I am upset that there was no payoff at the end. That's ridiculous.
I was bored to tears most of this movie because I couldn't, like I said, I couldn't even get into the only part of the movie that had any tension was in the story within the story.
Right.
And I'm just sitting there going, well, I don't fucking care. It's just a book that's being read.
Right. Right. I found that story to be compelling enough to keep my interest, but I like, you know, I like stories like that, like noir stories and stuff like that. But
I like stories like that. Like I said, if that had been the movie, I would have been right. all for it. But my mind just, it lost me because I'm like, this really means nothing.
What I also thought was interesting, though, too, is that, like Jake Gyllenhaal plays both characters.
Right.
And then the daughter is the same, because there is, you know, because the girl who plays his daughter is also the girl who plays her daughter in real life.
Right.
So I was surprised. I didn't understand why they got Isla Fisher to play the wife in the story and not just make it Amy Adams.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I'm guessing it's all in her head. You know what I mean? Like, she's imagining these people, so you would think that she would imagine herself.
Well, that's
the
problem.
Or...
Is it being read? Is it being interpreted as playing out in her head, or is it being interpreted as he saw it? Because he was the guy, and he lost his wife and child.
Yeah, yeah.
In what he considered a horrific tragedy
right.
in his life. So I don't. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a debatable.
I thought it was
topic.
I thought it was. I thought it was in her head.
It could
maybe,
be. Yeah,
maybe
could
she
be.
Sees herself as Isla Fisher. Maybe she says, "Ooh,
could be." I mean, it could very well be that since she's just the main on screen person,
right.
maybe it would have been confusing.
Right.
I don't know.
But like you said, I mean, great acting. Amy Adams is good in it. She's kind of a B.
She's a total B.
Jake Gyllenhaal is good in his part. Michael Shannon's great, as usual. Isla Fisher, not in it that much.
Nope.
But she's good for what she's done. Aaron Taylor Johnson was good. You know, he was a good crazy dude.
He knew how to sit on a toilet.
Yeah.
But no, Michael Shannon stole the movie in terms of acting.
I also liked Michael Sheen. He was in it, but one scene. And Laura Linney was good in her part. I'm just checking this to see if they just didn't list it in IMDb that she's... Because I'm pretty sure it is the same girl, isn't it? It's the same girl who plays the daughter.
I just assumed you had seen that already. I didn't.
They're both redheads, and they were
I didn't recognize it, but I'm not the one necessarily that would.
Right.
Like, notice. Because clearly she would have aged a lot. No, she couldn't have been the same girl. It couldn't have been the same girl.
Yeah, it could have been.
No.
Yes.
No, because that was a young girl. That was like a teenage girl in the car. She was in her mid-20s.
No, that's impossible. How could she be in her mid-20s?
Because she's not the same actress.
No, I know, but... No, I don't know.
Like,
I didn't think...
was like... She would have been like 19 or 20. I assumed that she had her right after...
No, I think they were the same age. Because she was...
The girl in the car was much younger. She was like... Because she was too naive. That's why she was acting out the way she was. She was younger. She wasn't near
19.
That's
how he wrote it.
she wasn't near 19 in the car.
Oh, see, I think
no,
she was.
I don't at all.
We'll have to find out. And then the award for what the fuck goes to Jenna Malone, who is also in one scene as, I guess, she's like the manager of Amy Adams's gallery. She was wearing that. Yeah. Like, what the fuck are you wearing? It's like, not as weird as her character in Neon Demon, but close. Very close. But yeah, Nocturnal Animals, you can probably skip it. It's not that good.
I didn't like it.
It's kind of frustrating.
Not that good. Imagine what I thought about.
Yeah, it's kind of frustrating. There's good parts to it. There's good elements to it, but ultimately it's just frustrating.
Yeah, and it's just like even the parts that are contentious that you might want to debate and talk about, not overly so.
Right.
You know, you don't care that much. So.
So let's move on to our final movie that we're going to talk about, and this is a movie that is getting all kinds of Oscar buzz and critical acclaim and everything. And that is La La Land. And this is a full-on musical written and directed by Damien Chazelle, who did Whiplash, which I loved. That was 2014. Even though I named Imitation Game my number one movie that year, I always go back and forth and kind of hedge. Yeah, like, maybe I should say Whiplash.
Great movie, yeah.
But La La Land is don't think it's just like a little bit. Oh, maybe they have like one song. No. This is a full on musical. Now it's not as.
It's not like every scene is chock full of music.
Right. It's not like
it's got a full story.
Right. Right. There's it's about half and half. Yeah. I'd say it's half.
Yeah.
It's half musical and it's half narrative.
Yeah.
Which is a little bit different from say a Broadway musical where it's like all music all
right.
the time.
Exactly. Exactly. Right.
It stars Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah, there's other no one else. Yeah,
there's
really
other people
matters,
in this. John Legend is in it, John Legend, Rosemary DeWitt is in it.
But they're pretty much every scene has Ryan Gosling and or Emma Stone in it. So.
But it's pretty much just the two of them, and basically Emma Stone. It's set in Los Angeles, hence the title La La Land. And Emma Stone plays an aspiring actress who works as a barista on the Warner Brothers lot. And Ryan Gosling is a jazz pianist who dreams of one day opening his own club. And he is very much a jazz purist. This movie is very... I liked it a lot. I didn't like it as much as you did, which is surprising.
Yeah, I didn't even really want to see the movie that much because I don't like musicals.
And I'm not a musical guy either. And I'm not a real big musical guy either. And I think that's part of what kept me from loving this movie because it's very bittersweet.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And that's not what musicals do. Like musicals usually are like,
I guess I can't really say because I don't watch a lot of musicals.
Most musicals are... very happy endings for the most part.
This definitely doesn't have that.
I mean, unless it's like Les Miserables or something like that. Right. You know, but like a movie like this is very much like
it's very interesting, contradictory. While you have dreams coming true,
yes,
other dreams die.
It's very much more like it's about them as a couple and how their relationship grows, something like that. But it's also really about their careers and reaching for the ring when it's there and all that kind of stuff. I don't want to spoil a lot of it because you really do need to see it. But
not get into the story too much.
My issue with it, I guess, is that the musical parts are very much like a old 40s musical. You know, musicals that they did in like the 40s, 50s, and 60s. You know, like... Gene Kelly, Ginger Rogers type stuff, which is fine. But to me, that didn't totally fit with the tone of the narrative.
Right.
Because the narrative, like I said, is very... there's comedy in it, but it's very much bittersweet. And, especially with the ending. For me, it didn't totally jive.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like... I kind of had like a disconnect.
That's where we disagree. Because I thought that juxtaposition worked really well.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, first of all, it's a musical. It's not a contemporary musical. It's not claiming to be a contemporary musical.
Right.
It is a... It's a classic musical.
It's
a traditional musical. Yeah.
It's not like Shitty Glee.
Not another way to do it.
Right. It's not like Shitty Glee and
just
all that kind of stuff.
Right. Just because it's a traditional musical doesn't mean you have to go set it in the 40s.
Right.
But that juxtaposition of that traditional sense worked really well because it was also what was going on within the story about how he's a traditionalist, but he's living in the modern times with his jazz.
Right. Yeah.
And same with her, right? She loves these classic acting, but she's living in contemporary times. So it worked for me. The only thing, this is going to sound really bad. It really is, but it didn't take me that out of it. But we talked about this. Mm. It was easy to tell that both these people struggled with the music.
Yeah.
So like, it's clear. It wasn't bad, but you could tell that they were having to hold back because it to me, it seemed like at some point, like, I'll take Emma Stone as an example. Right. Both of them. It sounded like at one take, maybe she tried to really go balls out, and the director was like, "We're going to keep you down here.
Yeah,
this is your basement right here, and this is where you stay." And so, none of the music was very powerful from a voice perspective.
No,
it was emotionally powerful, but
yeah, it's very clear that Chazelle cast them solely on their acting.
Yeah,
the two of them are not very good singers at all.
No, but it really didn't. It sounds bad because it's a musical, and we're saying that.
But that's a main component of it.
It is, but what I'm saying is it still didn't detract from the movie for me. See, I recognized it, but I went past it real quick.
My thing is, like, it becomes very apparent when you have a scene, when you have a guy who comes in, like John Legend, who is essentially the Lando Calrissian of this movie. And he comes in and he sings a song. You're like, that guy can sing. Right. That guy can fucking sing.
They amp it up and you can tell. Of course. But that's when you notice.
But even in her opening number where it's her and her roommates, like, all those girls, you could tell that they're like musical theater girls. You know, whereas Emma Stone's more just actress.
Yeah, I agree.
But that's kind of where, like, the disconnect came for me, because I'm like, the two of them are just okay singers. I'm like, and I'm interested in the story. I would have been happy if Chazelle had just made it just like a standard narrative movie about them without all the musical numbers and all that stuff. I would have been fine with that.
I think without the music.
Or instrumental. Not even singing, just instrumental stuff.
Without the music, the narrative is way less powerful. Because of the way the music, especially at the end, how it works, works its way into it. When this movie opened up, the beginning number, I thought I was going to hate the movie.
Yeah, because that's a full on balls out opening musical number.
That was an opening musical number. And again, I'm not saying that this was a contemporary musical. It wasn't. But I thought that the whole movie was just going to be just as balls out as this opening number was. And I was just like, I'm going to fucking hate this.
A lot of it's very subdued.
But then they toned it way back from there.
Because you had Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone singing.
But I really liked it. This might be in my top 10 for the year. Mm-hmm. It was a really good movie, and I'm as shocked as you are to hear me say that.
Yeah.
I love, like, Sing Street. Contemporary musicals like that I love.
Right,
like,
yeah.
What's the guy who does the James...
You should know better.
I know, I should. Anyway.
You're thinking James Corden, but that's not
James
Corden.
No, I'm not thinking of James Corden. But anyway.
Yeah.
I love those contemporary musicals, but the traditional musicals I'm not a big fan of.
Right.
But this really worked. I mean, even you had... You saw more flaws with it than I did, but you still enjoyed it.
John Carney is Sing Street.
Sing
Street Once and Begin Again. I liked it a lot, and that's a lot of it is based on the chemistry between the two of them as actors. And I liked the story too. I thought the story was good.
J.K. Simmons had a good,
J.K. Simmons good has a great has a great few scenes. Yes, he has a great few scenes.
I think the only. What did I say? The only thing that got me in the movie was very nitpicky is how they somehow remembered each other after literally not seeing each other for 6 months and only crossing paths at that point. So they never spoke.
Right.
And to me, that didn't really ring true, but
it
was served to move the plot along.
The songs are good. The songs are good. Yep. I don't know. It's like I wanted to love this movie because I saw the trailer. I was like, this looks like it's gonna be great. And then I saw it and I was just like, it was pretty good. I liked it, you know, but I didn't love it. Mm-hmm. And I almost felt that Moana was a better musical than this. You know, being a cartoon and everything like that, but it was more, you know. I mean, there's no song in here like "You're Welcome," so you know,
it's a great song.
But I don't know if it'll make my top 10. If it does, it'll probably just get in at the bottom. But then again, this has been a rough year for movies, so it's there's been a lot of like not good movies out there this year. But it just got nominated for a bunch of Golden Globes, so because of Golden
Globe. Yeah, I'm sure it'll be nominated.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it'll definitely be nominated for the Oscars. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
I mean, if for no other reason, it's just it's unique.
But I but see, for me, I'm willing to bet that I'll go see Manchester by the Sea tomorrow and be like, ah, yeah, that's the movie what I prefer. Over
wait,
this,
wait. You know? Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. It's that's just straight up tear jerking.
Oh boy. So
get your tissues ready, buddy.
For
you
me,
think,
though,
you think those trailers make it look make it look heartbreaking?
Don't tell me anymore. Don't tell me anymore. I was actually watching some stuff online, like a Variety has like their actors interviewing actors series, and there was one with Natalie Portman and Michelle Williams, and they started talking about Manchester by the Sea. I'm like, oh, done. We're done. I don't want to hear anymore. Yeah. And then there was one with Casey Affleck and Nicole Kidman, and she starts saying, "Well, in your movie, you start to blip. Done. We're done."
Well, Nicole Kidman.
Nicole Kidman is in. She's going to be in Lion.
That's right.
Like not that good.
No, it doesn't.
This was one of those movies where I saw the trailer and I was like, I think I'm gonna really, really like this movie, and it's I wanted to love it.
But so whatever scale you like it on, it's worth seeing.
Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely. Oh yeah, it's totally worth seeing. Yeah. It's totally worth seeing. It's no Office Christmas Party, but it's
right.
But it's up there.
I mean, it has a lot of laughs in it.
It does. Yeah, no, yeah, no, yeah, it does. It does. Yeah, Chazelle's great. I can't wait to see what he does next, honestly. Yeah. I just hope it's not a full-on musical again. Just, right. You want to integrate music into it, that's fine. Like in Whiplash, that's totally fine.
You can do it. Well,
yeah.
I think, was it you that told me that Ryan Gosling learned to play the piano for this movie?
I think Jen told you that. She told me that, yeah. And they're both really good in it. They really are. I would much rather see. It's like I said. He clearly went with the acting because I would much rather see them in this movie than say like Justin Timberlake and name
of course
a female.
Look,
singer.
Look. If you're gonna sell a musical to an audience today, you better have some star power behind it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, Justin Timberlake's a fairly big star. So I'm just he's pretty big.
Oh yeah, he can act too.
He can, he's not as good as Ryan Gosling. No, yeah, no. So it's come on. And whoever they would get, who Demi Lovato or whatever, is not as good as Emma Stone. So, so that'll do it for this episode of the HodgePodge podcast. Next episode, like I said at the top, will probably end up being Rogue One, I would think, and then maybe eventually we'll get to our Westworld episode. But thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Take care.
City of stars, are you shining just for me? City of stars, there's so much that I can't see. Who knows? I felt it from the first embrace I shared with you.